Chapter 14. Virginia. The Armour of Love. In the spaceport, south of Aegea, snow drifts down on five of the fastest vessels in the Republic fleet. Their crews and space legionnaires stand at attention. Patrols circle overhead. I meet the many-coloured eyes of the sailors and captains. After receiving Lyria's message and the data her sensors collected, I had them assembled as quickly as possible. I look at them and wish I could say, "We have received information of an armory of unknown size located on the fringe of the asteroid belt. Your mission will be to investigate the scene, locate the armory, and acquire any possible weapons or ships that may be of use in the defense of Mars." But I cannot. Instead I say, "My friends, this mission may decide the fate of our republic. I wish I could tell you its purpose, but you will be travelling through enemy-held space, and the chance of capture is high. Your ships are fast, but the rims are faster. Your route will also take you through the territory under attack by Volsung Fa, the warlord who stole most of the Volk fleet 8 months ago. Only your captains and my emissaries know where you are going. Not all of you will survive, but at least one of your ships must survive to reach its destination. The Republic and Mars depend on you. Your children and my own depend on you. I thank you for your trust from the bottom of my heart. Good fortune and good speed." I lift my fist. "Hail Libertas!"
"Hail Reaper!"
they shout and board up. His name is Darrow, I think, because the Reaper is not mine. He's not the man I love. Darrow is. "Endure," I once told him, "yet it is I who must endure. Reaper, Reaper, it never stops." They mean well, and the Reaper's name feeds them power. But they shout for the god, while I carry a hollowness inside me the size of the man. It's lonely. I miss my husband. The five senators acting as my emissaries linger behind the crews to receive my parting words. They represent three colours, red, gold, and silver. They're the best emissaries I can spare. I shake each of their hands. "You all know Regulus. He's as prickly as a cactus. But if his heart still beats for the rising, I know no better emissaries to help him remember it. Win him back to our cause," I say. "Our agent has not reported in since her last transmission, and we believe her ship has been destroyed, so keep in mind that you may not be met with open arms." I pause. "You cannot be captured en route. You all understand?" They nod. I wish them luck and watch them board before turning to return to my own shuttle, flanked by lion guards. Kavax waits for me there. The look in his eyes is unmistakable. "Word from Victor?" I ask. He nods. I sigh. I had hoped that she would be able to escape the noose that's slowly tightening around Mars. Instead, as I glance at the report, I see she's taken more casualties than we can afford. "If we can't punch out and hit them, this becomes a war of attrition." He nods again.
"Fortunately, we have all the helium."
"And they have everything else, including helium."
"If the rim shares their inferior variety," he says, "that stuff they mine from the gas giants is like jelly beans without sugar, you know."
If only reactors were as judicious as Sophocles.
"Sarcasm never inspired anyone. Let them come, I say. Let them come and die. Atlantia, Atlas, Lysander, Ajax, Helios, Dido, we will make Mars their grave."
I cannot share his ardour. Kavax has lost two sons. I have not yet lost my one. And I see the grief in his face, the hatred in his eyes when he looks up at the sky. There the reassuring lights of our ships and orbital battle stations twinkle, but none shine so brightly as Phobos, the headquarters of our orbital defences of Mars, and the site of Victra's precious dockyards. I try to believe our defences are strong enough to stop what will come. On my flight to Aegea from my gun battery inspections on the Thermic coast, I saw fishing boats on the sea, children flying kites, workers digging bunkers, and soldiers making rings for pancration in the shadows of their war machines. All know a battle is coming, but on the surface of the planet it does not quite feel like a siege yet. In orbit, over Mars, the tale is different. Millions in the Navy and defense installations are on battle watch. With the solar system turned into soup by the enemy's anti-sensor drones, I feel as though we've returned to the Dark Ages. Our long-distance comms are unreliable. Our radar and LIDAR assaulted by false signatures. The enemy could come and we'd have less than a week's notice. I wag the report at Kavex. This could have been done over comms. I take it you're coming along to see Pax. He nods.
It isn't every day the conservatory allows a student to see his mother, even if she is the sovereign.
I pat my old guardian on the shoulder and head for my shuttle. My bodyguards fall in behind us. Pax will be happy to see you. Where is Sophocles, by the way? I don't know how you're standing without him.
In the shuttle already, he says. I'll bet you a bottle of Roth Red that he's chosen your seat.
The wind howls as I wait for my son outside his school. The Dark Star Conservatory is perched high on a mountain. Nearby, only a few military installations and training facilities dot the range that stretches south to the continent's end. Several hundred banners snap in the twilight. The banners are as no-nonsense as the school's founder, Orion. Each bears the school's sigil on a field of black, a blue trident piercing a cracking gold planet. A perfect black sphere, the school looks as indomitable to its stark environs as I wish I felt. The conservatory was to be the forge where the next generations of rip-wing aces, destroyer captains, and torch-ship daredevils were made. Already the influence of their first graduating class is being felt in the ranks, their elite alumni aiding our struggle against gold command superiority, though many say it is too little, too late. It was 5 years ago that I watched Darrow give his speech at the school's opening ceremony. After he surrendered the rostrum to Orion, he came to stand beside me. The smile on his face and then his lightness at the after-party remains one of the more pleasant memories of the last decade. He was happy. He was proud of Orion, and he saw himself, if only for one evening, as a builder of the future. It seems so long ago now. We both thought we had so much future ahead of us. Our future has shrunken and darkened now that Pax is studying within the conservatory's walls, now that the enemy is setting the table for the inevitable siege of Mars. When Pax was born out beyond the ecliptic plane, I was on the run after my father had been murdered and Darrow taken captive by my brother in a garden on Mars. Back then, I never would have imagined I'd be sending my precious boy to study at a place like the conservatory, yet it is where he asked to go. He knows all too well the expectations the people have of him. He's already famous as the boy who killed a torch-ship. The Hollow experience is even available on the Black Web. My son will be a warrior. It makes no difference if he fights with ships or blades. Either way, the fate that awaits my son fills me with inexpressible regret and guilt. Worse, I've always let him know it. It was the only fight we ever had. That day the shuttle took him from Aegea south to the conservatory. I'd have that moment back if I could. We have not spoken since, and according to school rules, we ordinarily would not be allowed to until he graduates 6 years from now. But a sovereign should be permitted some privileges, shouldn't she? At first, the school's administrators, all blues, wouldn't let me inside. They believe the first step to creating a naval officer is severing the recruits, especially those not born blue, from their original colours' familiar structures. No mothers, no fathers, not for those of the Navy's killing elite. Their only family will be the brothers and sisters of the sect. The school's method is effective, but to me it feels too utilitarian and almost insidious. Chilled by my thoughts and the weather, I pull my red and gold cloak tighter around my shoulders. I squint through the falling snow toward the school. The snow is so heavy, the only feature of the school I can divine is the motto in huge iron letters on the facade. As above, so below. There's no sign of Pax. I glance up. Soon it won't just be Republic ships flying above Mars. Kavex joins me from the shuttle with Sophocles the Fox trotting dutifully behind. Fearing that assassination squads are already on Mars, or worse, the Fear Knight himself, Kavex seldom lets me out of his sight.
"The evacuation of civilians from Phobos is behind schedule," he grumbles. "There was a bombing this morning. Loon fundamentalists."
"Affiliated with the Loon's household?"
"Doesn't look like it. Lone Wolf. A green."
"A green?"
"It was a suicide bombing. Religion has returned to politics," he replies. "In the grand scheme of things, the bombing's only a minor setback. Look on the bright side. You've unveiled 4 traitors in a week. All high-ranking."
"That we have 4 traitors is hardly a bright side. Do they really think Lysander is any different from Octavia? It's the same system, even if Loon has a prettier smile and more games. Those bloody chariot races."
"I know it's been frustrating watching him rise.
What's frustrating is that he never comes into the field of battle, so Victor can just kill the little bastard and end his delusions of grandeur before he becomes a problem." Kavex puts an arm around me. "Sorry," I say. "I know you know. It's only that I just saw a hollow of him."
"I saw it too. He was wearing the hilt from the razor you gave Darrow."
"As if he earned it," I say.
"I have a question to ask you, Virginia."
I try to pull away to look at him, but he keeps his arm around me.
"The reputation of your omniscience grows. 4 traitors in a week, you know. But if the gods have taught us anything, it is that prescience always comes with a price. Odin gave up one of his eyes in exchange for wisdom."
I feared this moment from him. It was inevitable. I could not hide the source of my intel forever from a man like him. In fact, if Kavik's wits were not so dimmed by Daxo's death, he would have discovered it after the first traitor we clipped. "You want to know what price I'm paying, Kavex?"
"There are those who say Kavex Telemannus is a bad Republican. It is true. I am old in my ways. I have doubted many of this Republic's policies, especially concerning the Obsidians. But I hope you know my loyalty, and I like to think you trust me as much as I trust you."
I try to speak, but he rumbles on.
"It is also true I am not what I once was. My injury and my loss have... well, you are unaccustomed to seeing me weak."
"You? Weak?" I scoff at the notion.
"Don't deny it. I know you and Niobe worry I take too much on. I am not what I was, but I am still very much in the game. You understand? Whoever your source is, whoever has been helping you find these traitors, you can tell me."
I close my eyes. He's still not let me go. I enjoy the embrace while it lasts. Imagine the worst, and it is true. I can't bring myself to say it. He holds me tighter and kisses my head. He knows already, I realize. Of course he knows. I think of his sons, both of whom spent their lives in service to me until their deaths. Pax at the Institute, Daxo on the Day of Red Doves. And I want to cry. I loved them both, almost as much as their father did. "I didn't want to break your heart by telling you the truth," I say.
"Daughter," You are my heart, he replies. I trust you like I trust the vaulting sky. I look up, and there it is. Different shades, perhaps, but always there, always true.
There's motion from the school. A door, obscured by the snow, opens. Kavix kisses the top of my head again and releases me. Three figures make their way to us through the falling snow, my son and two instructors. Sophocles runs and leaps toward Pax, the tallest figure, to pester my son with kisses. When Kavak sees that my son has something on his head that is not hair, he darkens. A little startled myself, I put on my best face and beam a smile for Pax as he approaches. Instead of embracing me as I'd hoped, he salutes. 6 months at the school has made him nearly unrecognizable. His golden eyes are sunken, harder, his lips thinner, his skin pale as a miner's. But he's taller, far taller. Pax, you've shot up like a god tree. Already he's surpassed the height of the blues behind him, his instructors. Soon he'll tower over them. I eye the digital tattoos that now stain his laser-shaved head. They morph as snowflakes settle on his scalp. Adept ink, too? So soon? I raise a disapproving eyebrow at the instructors. The blue instructors are both waifish, but still cast more in the image of the school's founder than your typical blue. Veterans of our wars both have scars, one a robotic eye. By the phalero on their chest, I see both earned their scars under Darrow and Orion.
It was due, my sovereign, the older, darker instructor says. The star matron has chosen Adept Augustus for an accelerated track.
He was fought over for 3 hours after his divining before the navigators demurred.
My son will be a hunter. It's written on his forehead. The constellation Orion. The instructors salute and give us space. Adept Augustus. Accelerated track. I withhold my anxiety from my face and feel warmth as Kavix embraces my son, then steps aside to give me a moment with him. It will be just a moment, too. How are you? I ask my boy.
Learning fast, he replies. Curt. I hear the enemy is mustering for a summit. Is it regarding the action at Venus, or was it scheduled before?
Before, we believe. The Dustmaker was already en route to Earth.
Then it pertains to the next stage of the war, he says. Will it be Mars?
That depends, I say. On what, do you know? He considers.
Whether or not the Rim will continue to let Atalantia use them to soften us up, which she will unless she feels strong enough to attack and retain her primacy.
He is so precisely correct it is impossible not to smile. It is good to see you. He smiles, but not with his whole face.
You're angry at the ink, he says.
Angry only that I was not consulted, I reply. By your instructors, not you.
You agreed, no special privileges,
he reminds me, which indicts me because the visit itself is a special privilege.
Is it news of father?
I feel a pang of guilt. Of course, that's what he would have presumed this visit would entail. News of Darrow's death, or life, or would it be resurrection at this point? Does Pax assume his father is dead? Only rumours that he lives. I glance at Kavix. But the source is not credible.
What do you think?
He asks. It would be a guess. Your guesses are often more researched than most people's facts. My first impulse is to please him and make him happy, to spoil him. I know what is right. I trust my heart and narrow my eyes. Do you really want me to speculate? He pauses. This is at the intersection of what I have taught him and what he's learning from the blues. Speculation is fiction. My response may seem cold. It is not. It is a sign of respect from me, and also a reminder that I am not ignorant of his new way of life, nor excluded completely from who he wants to become. All hope is true until it is proven false, and even then, with ingenuity, it may be not, he replies with a little smile. Then he takes a shot across my bow. So you're here to tell me you've decided to pardon Valdir, finally. No, Pax. When the enemy comes, he'll be where he belongs, in a cell near the front lines, where he left the Free Legions. He rebelled against the Republic, don't forget. The Obsidians just wanted a little of the freedom they died for, Peck says. There are ways of doing that in the Republic, I reply. There are senators, avenues. In a civil matter, the cause may be right, but force cannot be the answer. They proved it. Sephi rebelled and paved the way for that Volsung Fa to steal her throne and sack three cities. We are still suffering the consequences of Valdir's decisions, Pax. When the enemy comes, we will feel it far more than we do even now. I cannot pardon him. Because they left Father vulnerable on Mercury, Pax says. Yes, I admit. But this is not a decision I made out of anger. He respects me enough to believe that. This is about Lyria, I say. He perks up at her name. Not lost in the belt after all, he asks. When you sent her out on the snowball, without my approval, sorry, Mother, he drones. You said the device in her head had antecedents connected esoterically to Sun Industries. You said because of that she might be able to lead us to Sun Industries and Quicksilver and all the resources you think he's hoarding. His eyes narrow, but boyish excitement manages to fight its way through his stoic facade. He does love a bit of intrigue, so I tease him a little. I looked into it personally while you were here. In fact, I found your hunch so compelling I sent a team of long rangers to help Lyria search. Meanwhile, I conducted a search for Regulus's hidden books. It was not easy. And a few days ago we received her signal from the belt, deep in contested territory. No, that's a euphemism. Lost territory. I believe we may have found Quicksilver's base. And you think he may have forces strong enough to deliver us? We caught his old Logos. The Logos doesn't know what's out there, but the information he did know suggests Quicksilver may have an entire fleet. Pax smirks like his father. When will you send emissaries? I just came from Aegea. They launched before sunset. His face falls. Who? Quicksilver's favorite senators and one or two of his least. He blinks at me as if I said something stupid. He'll dismiss them all, if he doesn't kill them. I frown. Why would he kill them? If Quicksilver dreamed of a nightmare, it would look like the Vox Populi, Mother. You know how sensitive he is when it comes to politics, to socialism. Few men bear insults well, least of all Regulus Arg's son. After all his efforts, to have his head hunted by a mob, his tower ransacked, his friends butchered, he shakes his head. Without Father, he'll want nothing to do with us. Honestly, he might even despise the Republic. You should have sent me. You? Mother, Regulus only cares about rarity. Respect. Pax. I can't send you off planet, I reply. It's chaos. Do you even know the life expectancy of a sailor out there now? In reply, he looks at the conservatory and then back at me. I can't, Pax. I will beam him a message should the senators fail. He may listen to me. Did he build a statue in your honor? He asks. No. He built only one. Not for you, not for Fitchner, not for Eo. Just Father. Spare your emissaries the trip. We need those ships. Victra's docks can't replenish our losses fast enough. The Rim has choked us of the resources we need from the belt. We need help. Badly. We can't wait for your father. He shrugs at that. Pax, we don't even know if he's alive. He smiles at that.
Tell that to the pilgrims.
I pause. You know about the pilgrims to Lycos? The ones going to pray for father's return?
I'm in school, not on Pluto, he replies. Father is alive until proven dead. I know you balk at religion, rightly so, but if father is anything, he is bloody damn hard to kill. Now, my sect is preparing for a match with Virgo. Was there anything else?
The question is as cold as his eyes. He's not forgotten how we last parted, what I said to him. But I fear he mistook my disappointment in myself for disappointment in him. I wanted to tell you... My voice falters. You know I did not approve when you asked to study here. Do you know why?
You think I'm resigned to becoming a weapon.
Are you?
The people need symbols, he says. When you have children, I hope you never have to feel the pain of hearing that from them, I say.
His eyes soften. It's true. I wanted more for you than a life of war. But I see you now for what you are, a son of the rising. I wanted to tell you I am proud of you. Not only proud of you, I'm proud of what you saw in Lyria and that you chose this place. My generation apparently cannot do this on its own, and I wanted to tell you, in case I don't have the chance again, I'm sorry. He tilts his head. I'm sorry this is the world that was given to you. It wasn't fair to bring a child into this. I should have waited. He searches my face.
Do you wish you had?
No. If I had, you wouldn't be you. And I think you're perfect. He looks down at his feet, searching for words. When he finds them, he looks up at me with the raw emotion of his father, but without the anger or the pain.
Mother, your inheritance was guilt. Father's was surrender. Because of you, because of father, mine is struggle. That is better than guilt. It is better than surrender.
I do not blame you. I thank you. You never pretended the world wasn't broken, even when a broken world favored you. He takes my hands. I think, if love is anything, it is truth. If life is anything, it is struggle. You taught me that. Father taught me my life is not my own, unless we win. So, do not come back here. Do not think of me. Fix your gaze on our enemies. Fix your heart on the struggle and win.
The instructors whistle at Pax. I have to go, he says. Can I ask something of you?
He nods.
You greeted me as your sovereign, but...
He steps forward and wraps his arms around me, and I wrap mine around him. It is the first embrace we've shared where I can feel a hint of the strength his arms will one day possess. I hold him for as long as I can. He is my favorite smell, my favorite sound, my favorite sight. He will never know how much I love him because he does not remember the day Darrow and I conceived him, or the months I carried him inside me, or the minute he came into the world, the moment he said his first word, or took his first step, or made me laugh for the first time. I remember all those things, and all the things about them. Where the sun lay in the sky, how his father's eyes sparkled, what I feared in those moments, what I hoped for his life to be. That season of life is a haze to him, but when I die and reflect on my life, I know I will still believe that season was the meaning of mine. When he walks away from me, back toward his instructors, with Kavok sharing a few jokes at his side, the whole of my heart goes with him. And I pray it is not the last time I see him, though I know it might be, because the enemy will soon be on their way. As the door closes behind him, I think on the stupidity of war, How ridiculous we must be to wage it when emotions like love run so much deeper in us than hate. By the time Kavax makes it back to me, I am ready for the enemy to come. I have more reasons to fight than they do. My armor is my love.